And the other thing too is like, it's not just blind spots, but sometimes people don't know and celebrate their strengths. I think this is the point that you were making a second ago. Like, yeah, you did great, but you could do so much better. And sometimes people don't smell their own roses or pat themselves on the back. Like coaches, we're cheerleaders as much as we're behavior, like as much as we intervene in behavior, we want to find out what the good feet are to put those forward. Let's keep doing what's working. So sometimes people don't, they're afraid of their gifts. They're afraid of their genius. They're afraid of the responsibility or the work it takes or the amount of attention they'll draw, you know? So a lot of times it's not just correcting an unwanted behavior or, you know, making a little bit more healthy, a less than healthy mindset. Sometimes it's giving people the courage to really go for it.
Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, man. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this, and especially because of what you do and in communication and public speaking and all those things. I've been looking forward to this. So before we jump in, could you just briefly introduce yourself and a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, my name's Jeff Klubeck. I'm a soft skills guy. You know, I believe soft skills make strong leaders, teams, and organizations. I've got a master's in communication, so that's kind of at the core of it all. Right? You learn the communication modules and you figure out how they apply in business. But I'm married. I got three kids, two dogs. I grew up in LA, but moved to San Diego for college, been here ever since. So I'm a lucky dude.
Well, you mentioned you're a soft skills guy. And Let's talk about how you got here. I want to spend a little bit of time about your origin story. What was it that you were most interested in when you were growing up as a child?
Oh, man. As a child, I mean, Early on, the adults would let me know that I could talk a lot. Like, oh, you should be a lawyer, they would say. So like, that was like the first thing I could remember imagining doing was being a lawyer. So I have a lot of admiration for the lawyers. But then later on, cable television got hot, right? And ESPN. So when I went into college, I thought, all right, I want to be a sportscaster, a sports broadcaster. I thought I was going to be a talking head in front of the cameras, doing sports journalism, sports broadcasting, ESPN. And then I got into college and things shifted. I got into sociology. I got into telecommunications management instead of production. And the other part of my origin story is that I've always been looking for leaders, people that are doing cool things. And my mom and dad, they were together. They loved each other. Hey, that was all solid, but they never went past high school. So after I got into college, I'm looking around for what does success look like and what are people doing that's cool? What's possible for me? So sometimes I was just going where I saw somebody else and I thought it was cool. Like I started teaching because I was as an undergrad, there was a professor that I wanted to study with. I held the camera for a lecture that he gave at the university club. And I'm like, oh, I can't wait to take his class, right? Like how cool. But by the time I got into his class, there was a graduate student teaching his class. So I was like, wait, graduate students can teach 300 level classes? That's cool. And so then it was a goal of mine to go to graduate school and teach class. And then anyway, so I can keep going along that road, but some of it's been intentional and some of it's been checking out what other people are doing that I think is cool that I can see myself doing. And then a third piece is, and I think you heard this when we were in a meeting together the other day, is that along the way, some people have believed in me more than I believed in myself. And then it's like, all right, let me prove them right. What does proving them right look like? All right, let me get the master's or let me travel the world and let me publish books. Let me, you know, so these accomplishments stacked up when in response to other people believing in me.
You mentioned that one teacher, that professor that you were looking up to. Were there any other people that stood out during that time that you looked to and say, I think that's really cool or I want to do this or do that?
Yeah, well, across the realms. In college, it was Dr. Mike Reel. Right. He wasn't the only professor that I really admired. There was another professor, John Eager. He was doing international telecommunication stuff and studying smart communities like technology and public-private partnerships and bringing together government and industry and riding the wave of technology. I thought, wow, that's so cool. Also, like when I was going through college, I did political organizing. So like I've always been in admiration of people that had better vocabularies than I did or seemed that they did better in school than I did or, you know, they seemed like they knew more. I want to hang out with you. You know more than I do. Let me, you know, I'll brave how uncomfortable it feels, but just to learn more. Right. So there's a guy named John Blyer that was influential on me. He's one of my best friends to this day, but he went to Tulane University. He was really well educated. He was super sharp politically and incredible vocabulary. And, you know, I looked up to him. I see, I admire a lot of people for a lot of different reasons.
So as you're crafting this vision of what you're doing, I want to ask you about the sports too. So let's put a pin in that for a second. Let's get back to the sports piece. You mentioned vocabulary. Is there a through line through most of these people that you were looking up to and they're doing well? Were there any, I guess, tools, talents, or techniques that you got from them of like, oh, maybe if I do this, I can get there?
Well,
look at me with the hard hitting questions.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's what it all comes down to, is that you're looking within. I remember when I, you know, it goes back to personal professional growth. When I didn't even know what personal professional growth was until I found out, right? And it's like, oh, wait a second, accountability, wait a second, telling the truth and looking within and coming to grips with patterns and habits and language choices and addictions and what? So in order to be a coach, or in order to put coaching on my menu, right, to be able to offer coaching as a service, I had to go through boot camp coaches training. You know, self-accountability, time management. You know, you can't hold somebody accountable unless you've had the experience of being held accountable. A lot of people misunderstand what accountability is, right? They think it's just punishment or the consequence, but it's like what you want to be held to, right? Our willingness to be counted. So in my coaching and leadership training that I went through three consecutive boot camp coaches trainings in order to learn how to basically put coaching on my menu and sell that as one of the services that I offer to solve the problems that I solve. So there's a lot of technique in there, a lot of technique. I mean, in other words, strategic staffing, like how to avoid hiring mistakes, right? Like on the practical side, but then the transformational side, how to author my own state of mind when I find myself in a mood that is unwanted and unwelcome. How do I get out of it? So there's the technique to ask myself, what do I need to believe in order to not be in this mood? If I was in, what mood do I want to be in? What would I be saying if I were in that mood? What would my posture be like if I was in that mood? What do I have to believe in order to be in that mood? And if I practice those three pieces, I can get into any mood I want to, right? So that's a really powerful technique to author state of mind.
Authorship of state of mind. I love that.
Yeah.
And so I want to talk about sports. I don't want to leave this on the side.
Because let's go.
Because you're a huge San Diego State fan.
Yep, I am.
Okay. What, you mentioned going to these other arenas and other areas, but was there a specific sport that you wanted to be a talking head for, or you wanted these sports for?
Yeah, no. I thought you were going to say there's a specific sport you wanted to play. You know, I thought you were going to go really into like therapy and trauma. Like my parents, God bless my parents, but they didn't put me in Little League, right? I used to ask them, hey, how come I never played Little League baseball? Like, you never asked. I'm like, ask, don't all, it does. Anyway, so that was the impasse. So I've overcompensated with my oldest son. He's playing college level baseball right now. He got a scholarship to San Diego State. But as far as Aztecs are concerned, I attended and survived 18 consecutive semesters at San Diego State getting bachelor's, master's, right? I was there in the Marshall Faulk days, right? And then I watched the basketball program evolve. You know, sad news as of the recording today, the baseball coach just got let go, Sean Cole. But as far as talking head, no, whatever. I had my favorite sports, but I would learn whatever, you know, to be the talking head, to present the news, to be able to come up with the shtick and the catchphrases that all the sports fans around the, right? To wordsmith your way into being sticky and memorable and, you know, bring some levity and joviality and fun to the otherwise, you know, competitive and business sides of sports, right? You know, I have a lot of admiration. You know, Chris Berman, he was classic, right? With all of his nicknames, and Stuart Scott with his, you know, his sayings, oh, he's cooler than the other side of the pillow. And, you know, so I love that. Like, you know, wordsmithing, making things sticky and fun, because, you know, like I talk about when I'm working with people on bringing out their brand, getting rid of the jargon and replacing it with slogan. You want to be sticky. You want to be memorable. You want to be catchy. You got to take some chances in order to do that, but the payoff is there when you say something that lands and sticks and people remember, right? So a through line is like wordsmithing, right?
Yeah. Did you ever get to do any of it? Did you
ever? In high school, I was the sports producer for the news show. We had a closed circuit program, right? So I would go to the games and I would video record the football or the basketball or whatever. I'd go and I would edit, I would write the copy, and then I would sit in front of the camera and read copy for this little, you know, ECR News, El Camino Real News, it's like a 15-minute program that ran once a week in everybody's homeroom, right? Second period homeroom. And so I was the sports producer. So my segments were 3 to 5 minutes. And so that's when I learned television production in high school. I thought, all right, I'm going to go on and work for ESPN. But my interests expanded, you know, when I got to college, as they should.
Well, that's good. And I love the way you just expressed that your interest expanded. And I don't want to be like, hey, you tried this. But I'm always interested to see where that went, because there's always that little bit of passion that's still there. Like, you love sports. You're so good at what you do with communication and the soft skills. And that's cool. And it's something that I always see people do. I'm like, that would be cool to be able to just talk the sports that you love.
Well, you know, it would be. You know, here's the thing, to extract what you're saying to something maybe useful for a listener, you know, or an audience member. It's very important to be aware of your passions. It's very important to feed your passions and live them to whatever version of optimization you can imagine, right? At the same time, it doesn't always have to be mixed with career. Right. Now, let's give a nod to, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day. Okay, cool. But that still doesn't equate one-to-one, equate to, I have to learn how to monetize what I'm most passionate about. Why can't I just be a fan and talk sports with my friends and find maybe other creative projects? I mean, so in other words, that window hasn't closed to be able to scratch that itch, live that passion. If I don't know if you can see right now, but you know, I'm pointing to Shaquille O'Neal's shoe. Where's Lamont Butler over there in the replica ring for San Diego State? And like, so I feel like I have passionate experiences through sports. Yeah, and it would be cool. 100%. It would be cool to be a talking head right now, to be a sportscaster, right? But there's cutthroat aspects. You know, it's competitive. A lot of people want to be in front of the camera. So, you know, I just know, to be in front of the camera, you might have to like do some stuff you don't want to do.
No.
Right? You might have to like be competitive in a way you don't want to compete. You might have to politic. You might have to brown nose. You might have to cut corner. You might have to, you know, have your shoulders in fight or flight, you know, for 18 out of 24 hours a day because, you know, somebody's coming to get your job or whatever. Right. Like, the way I worked it out with my wife's got a corporate disposition and I'm more, you know, entrepreneurial, educational. So I teach my classes. I've got a coaching, consulting, soft skills practice, call my own shots. I get to go to my kids' performances. And right. I saw a quote on the internet the other day that if you get to go to every practice and got a front row seat to their game, you're successful. Right. So I'm coming out of that phase with the older kids and making sure my schedule's flexible. I call my own shots. I don't have to ask anybody for permission for a day off.
Right? And from what I know of you and how you do things, there is a joy to your presence in what you do. So, yeah. You're doing the right thing with your life. As far as I can tell.
Thank you. I mean, listen. I look over my shoulder. I second guess. I what if and what about and coulda, shoulda, woulda. I'm a human being just like everybody else. But it's like, why waste a good pandemic? I wrote a book during the pandemic, right? Like, in other words, if all human beings become addicted to emotions, why don't we get intentional about what emotions we want to be addicted to? So I have been intentional about joviality, jovial, right? I want to be jovial. I want to express joviality. I want to be a walking dad joke. I want my tongue in my cheek most of the time. But also, right, what I do is hard. Right. It's not easy to look within, you know, right? You ever heard this? Where were your keys? Oh, it's always the last place you look. I'm going to embarrass myself right now. I thought that was because just like coincidence. Oh, the last place I'm going to look, that's what I'm going to find them. Now I realize it's logic. Once you find them, you're not going to look anymore. So by definition, it's the last place. All right. I didn't figure that out until my adult years. I'm embarrassed to admit that. But I say that to laugh your way to this, right? Looking within is always the last place we look also. Most of us are pointing our fingers at somebody else or complaining about something external rather than, you know, retrofitting ourselves, looking within and doing the work that we need to do to be resilient and strong and focused and determined and unwavering and so forth. So it's hard work to look within, to confront ourselves, to change a behavior. Joviality is the Trojan horse.
So when did you realize this or start the process of self-awakening looking within? Was there a moment or was there a process?
When it hurt too much, you're like, oh, this sucks, I gotta do something, man. It's like, when did you push off the bottom of the swimming pool and shoot really fast to the top? When I touched it, you know, and who knows if it was a rock bottom, right? But you know, I was becoming a brand new dad. my wife and I were figuring out, you know, that there was the worst economy since the Depression was on our feet, you know, with the banks collapsing and everybody was losing their homes. Remember 2007, 8, 9, 10?
I remember.
Yeah, it was a crazy time. So when you're a brand new parent and, you know, business partners are leaving you high and dry, short sailing or, you know, like we flirted, we almost went through bankruptcy. We filed, but didn't go through with it. We figured it out in time and stabilized. But like, that was a rough time. Right. And I knew that. And then another thing too, man, more specifically, I was Mr. Mom for 10 months. Right. Like when my wife and I were trying to figure it out, like, well, you were working up there. So we got daycare up there, but now your job's down here. And so I'm driving in an hour and a half of traffic both ways every day because the kids in daycare up there, like, we got to figure this out. Right. Where are we going to live? What property are we going to hang on to? Where are we going to move in and out of it? Stressful times as a brand new parent where that nothing challenges a marriage like becoming parents does, I don't think. And so I remember forming the C Corp, Get a Clue. Right. So that I could market myself as a consultant and just, you know, I had a vision that that would be a C Corp. And if I ever, you know, had equity plays and positions in other companies that, you know, Get a Clue would be the holding. And I got a real estate license. So I would go out and put on a real estate costume. Right. Well, I had a C Corp. I'm like, oh, I had two business cards. I had the real estate business card. And then I had this Get a Clue, this clip art thing that I made on my computer, a guy holding a light bulb, like, need some ideas, Get a Clue. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing at all. I went to a marketing event, real estate related, and a title rep who is into personal professional growth, a title rep, he was doing well. He had homes, the Porsche, he was, you know, the comp tickets to the baseball game. He knew his business. He knew what he was doing. He's polished. He was measured. His name is Brian Trachel, by the way. Great, great friend of mine to this day. And I hand him the two cards. Right? One's the real estate and the other one says, need some ideas, Get a Clue. He's like, oh, you're a coach? Dustin, I postured. I said, coach, read the card. It says consultant. You want to know how many dollars I had made at that point in my life as a consultant? Zero. $0.00. I was posturing. I was figuring it out. It was time for me to go out and start making money after watching my son. We got the son into daycare. I was Mr. Mom for a little while. It's all right, time for me to, if we can, you got to make more money than daycare costs is what we figured. So what do you mean, coach? When I came off of my, you know, my defense mechanisms. What do you mean? He's like, you know, like motivation and goal setting and like achievement and, you know, and he starts rattling off all these names, you know, like Tony Robbins and Brian Tracy and Jim Rohn and Zig Ziglar and all the names. And I only recognized Tony Robbins. I was like, oh my God, I know all this academic communication stuff from the classes that I've been teaching, but nobody knows that. Tell me more about this coaching thing. So that's when I decided, hey, oh, if I can learn that, I might be able to really build a practice, right? And so that's what happened. He referred me to the coach's training. I went through three consecutive boot camp coaches trainings. I learned how to coach. I had to get over myself. I had to look within and turn myself in and out. And I got coached by five different people every week. And I coached those five people every single week and broken down and built back up. And the whole thing, all, you know, riding around, listening to audios, you know, all the time in the car, reading books after books, and, you know, doing the sessions and showing up and transforming. So, you know, and then of course, and then I attached everything else I had to it, the master's in communication, the experience in the classroom, the wordsmithing, the empathy that I have to feel people, the silliness, the joviality, the public speaking acumen, right? And then all attached to this journey of personal professional growth for myself, right? So say, I want to learn how to be a coach so I can make money as a coach. Well, the truth is nobody needed it more than I did right then to stabilize and be who I needed to be for my wife and kids.
Yeah, that's amazing, especially when you talk about the coaching and everybody needs it. I feel like everybody needs coaching. Everyone needs therapy. Everyone needs someone to help them see their blind spots and what they can't do. And also, I remember one time a friend of mine was mentioning somebody that he was coaching in like physical performance, and he's like, oh yeah, this guy, I don't even know why he goes to me. Like, this guy is in great shape, like he's fine, he doesn't need it. And I'm thinking, well, actually, sometimes the higher of the level that somebody is or as good as they are exactly the people that need the coaching. And then I use different examples, like professional athletes, you know, they don't just have one coach, they have
several.
Steph Curry, like, I'm sure it's not just the head basketball coach. He has a shooting coach, a nutritionist, you know, probably 6 or 7.
I'll bet you he's also had media coaching as well. When you talk about the totality of a brand, and once he reaches a certain level of superstardom, so you think about Steph Curry just as the physical and the basketball player, but he's probably had media training as well, and leadership training and management training as well, right?
Given
the stature and the size of his brand. Yeah, man, it's a little simple, right? Let's start here. Is your life perfect? No. Okay. All right. What's the largest room in the world? Room for improvement. Okay. All right. So, you know, yeah, but I'm fine. I know you're fine, but if there was one next level, so there's always something to do. It's just a matter of, are we motivated enough? You know, successful people, they're so addicted to success. You know, they sometimes can't pat themselves on the back. They're always looking for the next thing. You know, they're driving themselves. So it's not the money that they're, it's just the emotional addiction of competition and go for it that they can't get out of. You know, other people get comfortable in their success and they forget to set new goals and ask what, and you know what I'm saying? I've actually outkicked my coverage. Like, I remember achieving certain goals and going, all right, well, now what? Like, this has been my goal, a big dream for so long, getting a master's degree. It's like, all right, now what? What's the new goal? Right? Publishing a book or being an author or, you know, getting speaking gigs in, you know, in international countries. You got, what's the next level? What's the new thing? Are you done? Cause you know the whole thing. If you're not growing, you're dying. Right. Mm. Right. And
yeah.
And then old dog, new tricks. So how likely are we to grow on our own? The math doesn't add up, right? We need somebody else to help us, you know, and you and I speak the language of trusted advisors, right? It's really important to find trusted advisors and let them do the advising and let them hold up the mirror. And the other thing too is, like, it's not just blind spots, but sometimes people don't know and celebrate their strengths. I think this is the point that you were making a second ago. Like, yeah, you did great, but you could do so much better. And sometimes people don't smell their own roses or pat themselves on the back. Like, coaches, we're cheerleaders as much as we're behavior, as much as we intervene in behavior. We want to find out what the good feet are to put those forward. Let's keep doing what's working. So sometimes people don't, they're afraid of their gifts. They're afraid of their genius. They're afraid of the responsibility or the work it takes or the amount of attention they'll draw. You know, so a lot of times it's not just correcting an unwanted behavior or, you know, making a little bit more healthy, a less than healthy mindset. Sometimes it's giving people the courage to really go for it, you know, and maybe this is what you were talking about with me earlier about sportscasting. Like, hey, did I quit on that dream earlier at some point in my life about being an ESPN guy? I don't know.
Well, I apologize.
No, you just got me all self-reflexive, right? It's fun.
No, and maybe that's part of it. So, but I mean, it's one of those things that I'd imagine if that's like your dream and you have all the skills for it and you love the sport, but the, you know, there's different things in life that we do and takes different paths. And again, the door's not closed either. So, right. You know,
you never know. That, yeah. Yeah. The proliferation of media platforms and channels is going to make a lot of things possible.
Yeah. Well, so one quick question before I want to talk about more of the soft skills and what you're teaching. And that's so topical right now and what's needed in this world. Going to the conference and the guy saying that being about being a coach, and you're going through that with your wife, and then going to these trainings and the coaching. Do you think that was the best thing that could have happened for your relationship or your marriage?
Yes. Well, you know, you ever seen a coin with only one side? I mean, I could, to be 100% honest, there's a yes and no there, right? Mm,
okay.
Because I've been, you know, I can't coach your spouse. You follow? And so there's aspects of it that have, you know, just by definition, my wife and I perhaps have like grown a little apart, or what I've learned about personal professional growth and what I've been willing to do, what I understand about discipline, behavioral change, overcoming addiction. I've done more of this work than my wife has. But here's the funny part, because probably I have more work to do. So in other words, without personal professional growth, we might not even be together right now. Do you know what I mean?
So yeah.
You're like, hey, you know, ask me what I do for a living. I wake up every day and figure out how I'm going to deserve my wife and kids, right? So I just, the card that I play, the story that I tell is I'm the one that needed to grow. I'm the one that needs integrity. I'm just inviting the world to play with me. I'm going to play this integrity game because I need it for me. But while I'm at it, anybody want to play?
So, exactly. You finding those tools to be more looking within and what can you do? And I feel like a lot of times when people don't have that, and it's always, you know, this other person did it, it's them, and you go back to word accountability. It's like, no, what did you have control over?
Yeah.
Like, how am I going to make this situation? What am I bringing to the table?
Yeah.
Is an important thing that I know you touched on previously.
I hope nobody in your audience can relate to this, but I'll bet most of them can. For me, it was like, it sucks. The unfortunate part is it's happened more than once in my life, but there's been times in my life where it's me, where it was the, no, it was, oh no, where finally something or somebody helped me see that the common denominator in all of these things I'm complaining about is me. Right. And it's embarrassing when every second that you're judging somebody else for something that you're unhappy about in your own life is a second robbed from the time you could do something. So it's embarrassing. And I've been embarrassed a couple of times in my life where I look, oh, but this, oh, but that, oh, but this. Well, who are you being right now, Jeff? Oh, shit. Right. Who am I being right now? Ew. Don't want to do that anymore. Let's go back to joviality and being curious instead of judgmental and shaping a path for people to be the best versions of themselves rather than pressing on people, which pushes them away and on and on and on.
Well, one of those things, though, especially when you surround, going back to the trusted advisor thing, when you surround yourself with people that love you and care about you, I mean, hopefully people can surround themselves with folks like that. And if you're not, you know, that's another thing. Walk away from the people that are. But like when you can look at people and their critique or the things they say, and it's coming from a place of compassion and coming from a place of, I'm not telling you this to hurt your feelings. I'm telling you this because I love you. And I think this may be not only not helping you, it may be hurting you.
Yeah. You know? That's an interesting one. You know, I had one of those recently. You know, somebody went proactively. Right? It wasn't necessarily even in the moment. It was like a day after the observed behavior. They reached out to me. They said, hey, I like you. And, you know, I observed this. That's not, you know, for what it's worth. And he just gave me his opinion, and he was packaging it. And I was hesitant. Like the ego defense comes. It shows up automatically, right? And it's like, what's going on in your life where you have time in your day to like call me, leave me a voice message, have me call you back, and the only thing you want to talk about is your opinion about my behavior at this networking event last night, whatever it was, right? So, you know, the social event. And then in a minute, I'm like, wait a second, I chose. I'm like, this guy's face value coming from a good place. If that's 100% true, what does that look like? And then it just like thank you so much.
Yeah.
Right. And then another thing too, hand in the sand, right? You hang on to what you want, you let the rest fall through, and you just say thank you no matter what, right? And it's hard to do. You know, sometimes people have a hard time receiving compliments too. So not just constructive feedback, but say, hey, Jeff, like people have come up to me and, hey, Jeff, I love the way you introduce yourself. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know what I wanted to say. You know, but they're like, just say freaking thank you, Jeff. Like there, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah. I just practice like you to say it with me. Thank you. It's so hard, right?
No, yeah. That's hilarious. So, okay. I want to talk about the soft skills and your teaching, because especially right now, there is a epidemic of people that lack social skills and many things. And so what you teach is so timely, and you've been working on this for a while. Can you talk about the process and your thought? Just run us through soft skill, you as the soft skills guy, but also the integrity game. Weave us through this.
Okay. Wow. All right. So soft skills is just one way of saying like communication, right? But the problem with the word like communication is that everybody thinks they're good at it, right? Like there's words like parenting and driving and communication and integrity. Everybody considers themselves to be really good. It's just everybody else sucks. Are you with me? Right. So we judge ourselves by intent. The rest of the world's just judging our behavior, right? So I'll come to the integrity game in a second. So soft skills, just to be surface about it. I have a corporate soft skills training library of like near like 100 titles, like off the top of my head. Time management, assertiveness and self-confidence, be a likable boss, train the trainer, emotional intelligence, change management, talent management, strategic staffing, personal branding, developing corporate behavior. There's a list, right? And they're ready to go and I can customize them and implement them for the clients. So soft skills and soft skills, corporate soft skills training and development. When it comes to the integrity game is a framework I developed that lets me deliver soft skills, right? So we talked earlier about coaching, right? Coaching is where we talk and it's your goals, right? And we match strategies and tactics and resources to the goals that you set, break that down into the commitments that you make, but then you go do the work. So coaching is we talk and you do the work. Whereas consulting is I have a deliverable for the client, right? Okay. Training is everybody's working, but so that learners can do something later that they couldn't do sooner, right? Or info products, right? So the integrity game is, it's all of it. It lets me deliver all of that, right? So it's a keynote, right? That I can accordion from 15 to 90 minutes. Okay. It's a 10-point model. Each point on the model is like quote unquote double clickable. So you can double click each point in the model and a world of personal professional growth content comes up. Right. And then it's a framework to fall back on for to ask questions in coaching sessions. It's a framework to deliver training programs. It's a framework. Do you know what I'm saying? Like it's basically a brand that I'm building and it's born in the land of accountability. It's a little Trojan horse. Right. So what I mean by that is if I started a keynote and I asked the audience, how many of you have an external accountability source? You can laugh imagining that. Right. Right. That's not the way to start a speech. How many of you believe you have integrity? 100% of the hands go up. Okay. So now as a thought leader, as what I do for a living, if I'm how I'm going to differentiate, what am I contributing to the space in personal professional growth? Well, I believe I'm thinking about integrity a little bit differently. I want to broaden or deepen our understanding. So it goes a little like this. How many of you believe you have integrity? Everybody raises their hand. And then I say, keep your hands up and repeat after me. I do solemnly swear not to shoot the keynote speaker in 40 minutes, right? They laugh, ha, ha, ha. They say, I don't want to offend you by suggesting you have no integrity to start. I want to be invited back. I want good ratings. Let's make sure we're talking about the same thing. So now right off the bat, I got people in the conversation. What is integrity? Right? And I always get two answers. I never, ever do not get these two answers. One, somebody in the audience will say, be your word. Do what you say you're going to do. And then people nod and go, yeah. Like the mob mentality. Yeah, be your word. As if they've all got jilted that morning by somebody, right? Yeah. It's super funny to play on that energy in the room. So somebody else, be your word. And then the other answer I get is do the right thing, regardless of who's watching, or do the same thing when nobody's watching as you would when somebody's watching. And people nod their head and go, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this all tracks. I'm following. Okay. So I'm waiting for you to pull the rug here.
Well, but the thing is, there's two things I like about those answers, and then there's things that I don't, right? So the two things that are cool about those answers is that when we do what we say we're going to do, we integrate our word with our behavior. There is a coming together when we do what we said we're going to do. We've brought our word and our behavior together. There's an integration, a coming together. Same thing over here. If we do the same thing when nobody's watching that we did, right? Now there's an integration of behavior with values or morals or ethics, whatever the right thing is. You follow? But I've asked this all over the world, you know, to thousands of people, and nobody's used the word or the concept of integration in their answer, right? But they start with the same six letters, and it's kind of funny, you know, integration, right? But most people are sitting in vibration of judgment of others when they're not their word or not consistent in their behaviors, right? Well, the other thing is that behavior shows up on both sides, behavior with word and behavior with values or morals. So behavior is the evidence of our integrity. It's not, well, what I meant to, or I was just trying to, or I thought you wanted me to, or anybody in my situation would, or what's the big deal? Or that's not integrity. Okay. So we judge ourselves by intent or story, right? But the rest of the world's judging our behavior. Same thing. Everybody else is judging themselves, but we're judging their behavior. So we're running around calling, right? We all raised our hand when we said, who has integrity? I do. But somehow everybody else doesn't, right? They're not there. So I'm holding up the mirror when I'm doing public speaking version of this. Does that make sense? Right. So those are two things I like. Number one is the concept of integration and that behavior shows up in both answers. Okay. But what I don't like is what if I said I was going to sleep on the couch for 22 out of every 24 hours. And then I did it. I will have done what I said I was going to do, but could I claim integrity by sleeping on the couch for 22 out of 24 hours? What if I said I was going to get in the car and drive into the first pedestrian I saw? And then I got in the car and drove into the first pedestrian I saw. I will have done what I said I was going to do, but could I claim integrity? And I know there's, you know, smart Alex in the audience who'll say, well, it depends. If your goal in life is to vehicular manslaughter, or if your goal in life is to be couch potato, then yeah, you got more integrity than anybody. But come on, we all know the answer is no. Right? So be your word is good, but it's not good enough. And then on do the right thing, regardless of who's watching, you live in the same country I do. We can't even agree on what's true. You know, like who's the president, you know, right? Red and blue, two wings of the same bird. So you're watching one news channel, you can think something's totally different than if I'm watching a different news channel. So what's the right thing and who decides? But more philosophically, sometimes time is money. Sometimes patience is a virtue, right? So there's conflicting success principles, right? Sometimes if you never quit, you'll never lose. And sometimes you better know when to cut your losses. So it's not enough to just sit there and say, do the right thing, regardless of who's watching. What's the right thing? Isn't it? Doesn't it depend? Isn't it a moving target? Isn't it context specific? And isn't it none of your damn business when we're judging other people? It's up to other people to decide for them what's right or wrong and be true to that. But looking within is the last place we'll look. Are you with me? So integrity game is it's an autobiographical journey. It's not a judgmental journey, yeah. Right? And then so basically the keynote goes, so the two things are good to get us into the conversation, but this is what I like and don't like. So I created a 10-point model, 10 things that I think we need to bring together in order to increase our integrity, in order to retrofit ourselves. Conceptually, a building, a bridge, or a tunnel will collapse under pressure tests without structural integrity. Well, so will individuals, teams, and organizations. So how do we retrofit the performer? How do we retrofit the team? How do we retrofit the culture? My answer is through soft skills for strong leaders. So here's a 10-point model, and there's a lot of doors to knock on to get into the soft skills party. So that's, yeah.
So this is great. And so I love the way you just laid that out and were able to describe that. And what I've heard and seen, especially as kids now or you know, younger or just everybody, but mostly I'm seeing it now in the youth, everyone's on their smartphones, technology. They lack the soft skill. And so do you think that's mildly, I throw a lot of other words on it.
Yeah, I hear you.
So like this huge challenge that is going to continue to manifest itself in culture and community and corporate world and everything in the world.
Can I get the joke out of the way before I give you a serious response?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. First of all, here's the joke, because you know human evolution is what it is, right? So the joke is, is that don't worry, it won't be long before they grow the third eyeball out of their forehead so they can still protect themselves while they're on their devices. Don't worry, the third eyeball is coming, and I think that's the development of the third eyeball. You know, I think that's a whole movie or series or. The creatives that can work on developing this third eyeball, and when it finally busts through the first person's forehead, because we have to protect ourselves, because we're not getting off our devices, are we? Right? All right. So to be serious about it, yeah. For me, I'm lucky. The integrity game, I went in book form. I wrote the book, and it was noticed by the director of the School of Communication at San Diego State. They asked me to come out of retirement. I had taught for 20 years after getting my master's before I was going around the world coaching, speaking, training. COVID hit, whatever. So anyway, I'm back on campus now at my alma mater, right? And I'm in the classroom, and it was 2023. They were zombies. So it's not they're on their phone all the time, and then ChatGPT is coming along, and they think they can AI their way through their assignments. And the classroom that I was teaching in at my alma mater looked nothing like the classroom that I'd left in 2017, 16, 15, even though technologies were emerging. Attention span is shrinking. We're more divided politically, socioeconomically. The wealth gap has increased. They went through a pandemic. You know, even if there's no pandemic, even if there's no social media, they're homesick, they're mentally challenged. You know, and we're talking about students now that are away at college, especially first year students, right? So there are challenges. I only have a couple of answers so far. We have to take an inferior posture to the youth. We have to come at it from like, tell me what it's like to be you, because I don't know. And I could be frustrated that you're not on your phone and you're not paying attention to what you're doing. I can be frustrated that you're trying to keep up with the Joneses. I can be frustrated that you see something on, you know, social and you repeat it in public and it's embarrassing. I don't know what it's like to be you. I didn't grow up with the way you grew up, right? So I think what we have to do as adults is try to find, like, what's the same regardless of the technology? What's the same regardless of what period in history we are? What's the same regardless of who's in office? What's the same? And know that we're okay there. We can parent that. We can lead that. We can mentor that. We can lean into. We've got a lot of advice. We got a lot to offer when it comes to the things that are the same. Let's keep a superior posture there. When we know it's the same 100 years ago, it'll be the same 100 years from now. We all need to eat, right? Okay. That's not going to change. Okay. Now, what's totally different? And let's take an inferior posture there. Let's stay curious there. Let's let them teach us, right? For example, this book that I wrote with my daughter, Kluby Snacks, it's 52 of my motivational quotes, but then my daughter's responses to them. And I asked her, I said, hey, will you help me? I've got over 100 quotes and I want to put out a book of quotes because I want to market my quotes. Will you help me? I need your brain. Your brain. You're smarter. You're hip. You get social media. You have more followers than I do. Help me find it. Tell me which ones suck. Dad me. Like, let me have it. Say, Dad, this is horrible. Dad, this needs to be rewritten. Dad, what were you thinking here? Give it to me. And I've never had her attention more than when I took an inferior posture. It totally transformed my relationship with my daughter. She comes up and initiates hugs with me now and asks me how my day is. And she'll share from her day. And she comes online with me every Sunday night to talk about a new motivational quote every week. I feel like I'm representing cross-generational communication, and I'm leaning in to try to understand what it's like to be my daughter and have all these TikTok followers and get tokens. And I don't know what it is, but I can't pretend. What's an adult? It's just a child that's trying to take a little more responsibility. But, you know, it's okay to admit that we're children, even in the adult seat, right? Like, so I want to learn from these kids, and being in the classroom is a gift to me because I get to be right there. You know, I get to be right there. I'm paying attention to who are the kids that put their phones down in my class. What am I saying that gets them off their phone? Who are the kids that paying attention just too hard? They just can't do it. It's something that I'm paying attention to. You're hitting on something that I don't have solutions for, but those are a couple of initial thoughts.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really has the solution for it, but mm-hmm. I know that you're on the front line.
Yeah.
And you specializing in communication and soft skills, like you have the tools to help whatever it is that needs to be done. I mean, well, so... Hey, like, here's so it's all on you, Jeff.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
the future is all up to you.
No problem. But I mean, again, back to still, we all want to feel significant. We all want to feel certain. We all want to feel connected, right? Go back to like a Tony Robbins model or Abraham Maslow in the hierarchy of needs, right? What people want has been studied forever and it doesn't change. We all want food, clothing, shelter, security, safety, certainty, right? We want community and connection instead of loneliness, right? We want to be significant and capable and recognized and celebrated rather than ignored. We want to grow instead of stuck or digress. And we want to give and we want to contribute. So now it's like, all right, while they're on their phones, while they're social mediated out, while they're getting high on information, like super high on information, and while they're getting radicalized on information or while they're getting indoctrinated, it's never that's always been there. That hasn't changed, right? It's just how many channels and the source and the speed, but we still want what we want. So how can I, in the position that I'm in, give somebody certainty? From the position that I'm in, how can I give them variety and excitement and make it different from them and fun and novel and entertaining? From the seat that I'm in, how can I make them feel important? How can I bring out the best in them? How can I learn enough about them to teach them that I believe in them? You know, that's what I had when I was coming up, somebody to believe in me. So I'm just looking for the familiar things that I know I can make a difference in, and I'm staying humble and inferior from a posture perspective. Humble, curious, inferior. It's like incredibly liberating to just admit I don't know what they're going through. So I need to learn and I need to, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's amazing. And especially one of the things that you mentioned, talking about accountability, you recognizing that and knowing the hierarchy of needs in there and saying like, well, what can I do? It's easy to be like, yeah, these kids can't put their fucking phones down or whatever. But it's like, okay, what are they missing and how can I help? That totally tracks with who you are and that makes
sense. Yeah, awesome. What if it's like, hey, everybody have your phone out? Good, take a picture of this slide and make a stupid pose in front of the slide just to break up their thing and to get them to lift their phone up, right? I'll do whatever, right? Like I'm on the front lines. Leaders go first, but back to, that's why the joviality and the being the walking dad joke helps a lot, because they don't see the intervention that I'm bringing, right? I want to intervene in mental disease. I want to intervene in homesickness. I want to intervene in loneliness. I want to intervene in insignificance. I want to be a guy that believes in people and helps shape the path to something better for themselves.
You also work with a lot of corporate, you know, you work in the business. Well, we met in the advisory sector. Is there anything that's big that you're missing that are common threads that you see that are, let me ask in this way. I have noticed, and I've talked about this many times on this podcast and other places, that sometimes people that become successful or in leadership positions aren't the best leaders. They're not the best managers. They may have been really good at sales or really good at this one thing, and then the only place for them to go is up. So they become a lead person in leadership position. What in your working with other teams and other companies are the biggest things that tend to be missing in their skill set?
Well, accountability, right? So, I mean, I'll break it out three ways, right? One is engagement, two is motivation, and three is accountability, right? I can elaborate on anything I need to, but I want to come back to what you said. People that are in leadership positions that aren't great leaders, right? Well, there's probably more buckets, but let's just break that into two buckets, right? Number one is the person that shouldn't be a leader. Just because they're a good individual contributor, right? They can produce the most widgets, doesn't mean that they're qualified to be a leader of widget producers, right? Unless they're trained on management, you know, performance. Do you know what I mean? They need a whole new set of skill sets once they have direct reports than the ones that got them noticed, right? So the other thing too is accountability, right? Back to accountability. Like, you're only promoting this person because they put up the numbers, they're a low-hanging fruit, and they can start tomorrow rather than you doing the work of a strategic staffing process. Write the position description, update the position description, create good interview questions, get approval from up above, get the position budgeted, carve out time to source candidates, screen candidates, and follow it through. You don't want to do all of that. You just want to hire the widget producer. Great. Right. So there's laziness. There's efficient. I don't have time to look for new candidates. Let's just promote Bob. Okay. Right. People don't have trusted advising, right? External accountability. Okay. So first of all, that person should never be promoted in the first place. Like, oh my God, if you're producing the most widgets, I just keep producing widgets. They probably don't want to go up to management anyway, because if they're producing widgets on commission, right? Right. If they get bonus based on productivity or whatever, that's probably more money than they'll make leading other people, not getting to control their own destiny in their own individual production. Right. So some people can produce for themselves. Like Michael Jordan was not a good NBA coach. Right.
I wouldn't imagine so.
Magic Johnson was not a good NBA coach. Right. Okay. So then the other part of it is the icky part. Right. Because the first part's correctable. Like, hey, let's just have a strategic staffing process. It's okay if you want Bob to have the job, but have Job go through the process, answer these interview questions. Let's assess these skill sets against these position description duties. You follow? There's different duties on this job than that job. So how do we assess it, right? And let's other candidates interview. And if he's still the best candidate, right, then offer them the job, right? So people, that's fixable. The stuff that isn't is the people that are leaders because of politics and backstabbing and conniving and, you know, all of that dark stuff, right? Whether it's, you know, nepotism, favoritism, somebody's got dirt on somebody else, somebody made a mistake at a holiday party and it's caught on video. So guess what? You better promote me or else. Or who knows? There's all kinds of the dark side of promotions, right? And I laugh because it's funny to think about all of that stuff, because what are our other options? So there's a lot of people that are, you know, they're getting passed over. You know, I deserve the job. Well, why didn't you get it? Well, I'm not willing to. Well, maybe you should do some public speaking. Maybe you should learn some soft skills. Maybe you should. There's always, anyway. But leadership is just saturated. The word leadership is so. If I can, oh, I'm a leadership coach. You can't distinguish me from anybody else. I'm a leadership trainer. So what? You know what I mean? It's like it becomes. So depending on the true culture of the organization and the true decision making and the true leadership, let's hire leaders that are consistent with our vision, consistent with our mission, consistent with our values. But a lot of organizations put up vision, mission, values, but when you look at their behavior, there's no consistency. and who holds people accountable in politics and red tape. And there's people afraid of losing their jobs for speaking their mind. And, you know, then there's just so many factors at play. People look the other way. Oh, it's not my response. It's not my problem. Well, that sucks. Water cooler talk, right? That's why integrity's tough.
Yeah. And you saying that the words on the wall versus the behaviors and that integration, what that is, again, there's that word. You really, actually hearing you walk through that and explain that, I don't think I'll ever look at the word the same again. You win. You win.
Woohoo! No, I don't win. It's another win for the integrity game.
That's right.
It's a win for the game.
Yeah,
The game is what wins. You know, I want to popularize the integrity game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you did with me. That's one.
Awesome,
I got one, and hopefully some of our listeners will as well. Hey, Jeff, thank you. You've been very gracious with your time today. Before we leave, I'll share your books, your profile in the show notes, but is there anything else that you want to leave our audience with?
No, I'm grateful to be on. Super approachable. If anybody wants to learn more about what the Integrity Game is all about, it's easy. If you go to theintegritygame.com, we got a bunch of freebies up there that people can check out. My LinkedIn profile, message me. I'm happy. Anybody that's listening gets 2 complimentary coaching sessions with an Integrity Game certified coach if you're interested. And we've got self-paced ways to like dip your toes into the Integrity Game, or we can have live one-to-one interaction. But we just invite everybody to play the Integrity Game and look within. Let's have some fun along the way.
All right, Jeff, thank you so much. It's been fun.
Yeah, man.